The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 183 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Sunday evening. It is September. We are talking about Braves baseball, and joining me as often, Scott Coleman is here. What's up, man?
How's it going, Brad? It's been a couple weeks since I've been on, just traveling and life and all that good stuff. So good to be back, and obviously the Braves have been playing really well. Sunday notwithstanding, they've been doing pretty fantastic over the last few weeks. So lots of good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. And while today's game did not go particularly well, I sort of made a funny passing mention of how we have to talk about today's game. We don't really have to talk about today's game much, but we'll come back to some, we'll do more results a little bit later on the podcast. We're going to handle a little bit of roster stuff early, just to kind of get it out of the way, and we'll push the game stuff, because it was very, very good, as everybody I think knows if you're listening to this podcast. We'll save that for the end. And quickly, I want to thank Eric for pulling double duty in the last couple of weeks, and also Zach Dillard for pinch hitting for Scott, because Scott just is too big for us, that's all.
I'm kidding. Traveling across the country, brother. Weddings nonstop, it seems like.
I understand. All right, let's dive in a little bit here. In addition to the big topics, which is what's going on the field, there was roster expansion, kind of a slow trickle this week. First, it was AJ Minter and Bryce Wilson coming up. Then it was Adam Duvall and the great Darren O'Day making his long-awaited appearance on the roster. And then Austin Riley came back on Friday, lined up with facing a lefty, which made a lot of sense, and Patrick Corbin. A lot of people were asking for our thoughts on the roster and looking ahead to the playoffs. I've talked about the playoff roster a couple of podcasts in a row now, so I don't want to do too much on that, but it's interesting because, you know, they've now loaded their roster up to, like, you know, more than 30 players for the stretch run, and Mark Bowman, friend of the program, released a projected playoff roster that we can talk about if you'd like to a little bit. But what are your thoughts on the expanded roster? You know, obviously AJ Minter being not very good is kind of the one thing that jumps out to me, because, you know, we kind of all expected Duvall and Riley to be up whenever they were going to come up. Riley a little bit longer, based on Gwinnett's play, I suppose, but not Gwinnett's done. So no worries there, and the roster is what it is, and it's September baseball. But what were your thoughts on kind of the way that was constructed? And I guess we can look ahead as well.
Yeah, this time of year, it only makes sense. I mean, as we saw, again, not to talk about Sunday's game too much, but, you know, I don't want to say it was a blowout and the game was over, but you kind of had the sense the way that Max Scherzer was pitching. The game was, it wasn't a one-run game in the eighth inning, where if you throw out guys like AJ Minter, Chad Sabatka, Darren O'Day, you know, it's a long year, and I think the bullpen has been really heavily used over the last 6 weeks or so. By bringing these guys up, obviously you're not going to start throwing them out there in close games, or at least I wouldn't hope so. But if in games where you're down 8-1, I think Jeremy Walker also got called up. He got some garbage time work today. I'd much rather give these innings to those guys than, you know, throw Shane Green out there, who's been used so much, or Chris Martin, or, so yeah, it makes sense. Bryce Wilson came up and then went right back down. It never hurts to have guys who can throw multiple innings out of the bullpen. I think that's what Bryce will probably do here the final couple weeks, maybe even make a spot start or two. Assuming they clinch fairly early on to give the starters some rest. So it makes sense. All the teams do it, and with good reason. The bullpens at this point in the year are pretty gassed, and you just want to make sure you have enough juice for the final couple weeks of the year, and then of course the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you have three catchers, you have all the stuff that you would want in September, and it makes a lot of sense to carry those guys. You know, using the lower tier pitchers does make sense. You know, there was some faint hope, I think you tweeted this out as well, that you know, it'd be nice if AJ Minter was AJ Minter again, but there's no sign of that. It's just that he's been battle season. I wish he was really better, because that's kind of the weak spot in the bullpen. If you look ahead a little bit, is that lefty spot beyond Sean Newcomb, who's had his ups and downs as well, but. If you assume Sean Newcomb is there, you know, it's Jerry Blevins or bust. There really isn't anybody else since Minter has been so shaky. So that's kind of a weird spot. And we were kind of hoping that Minter was going to show a little bit better, but that hasn't really happened. By the way, the whole thing I wanted to mention quickly about today's game, I guess shouts to Brian Snicker a little bit for getting the Stars out of the game today. They sat the last two innings, which isn't a huge deal by any means. But Snicker has kind of notoriously been bad about playing guys and overplaying guys. So it's a very, very small victory. But he got the Stars out of the game for the last two innings in a blowout. And, you know, that's something that happened that I want to at least say, you know, good on him for doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the advantages of having a now 9-game lead in the division. You know, if they were a game up on Washington and down a couple runs, would they do it? I don't know. But when you have this advantage, it's something the Dodgers have done really well. Not to always compare the Braves to the Dodgers, but the Dodgers obviously know what they're doing. When you have this much of a division lead, you have to do things like this. Once you're in the, you know, games 140 and 150 of the year, as you said, just a couple innings off is smart. Even if it prevents someone fouling a ball off their foot and being a little hobbled for a day or two, it's all worth it. Get those guys a breather and then get ready, because while the Braves have built themselves a division lead, they have a pretty tough upcoming stretch, which we'll talk about, you know, Phillies and then the Nats again. They're going to need to be ready to go for this if they're going to make a run.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth saying, and I guess we buried the lead a little bit. When you win nine in a row and 17 of 19 games at a really good time, it allows you some nice opportunities. And that's what I think hopefully will be the case. You know, nothing's over, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get going on the podcast. But a nice situation the Braves are in allows them to be a little bit creative and be flexible and kind of utilize all the roster tools that are at their disposal here. I did tease the Mark Bowman piece. I want to reference it a little bit here, and again, without going too deep on it. Some interesting takeaways that I thought we should at least hit on from his projection. And again, it's a projection, and apparently this is going to be a weekly thing from Mark, who of course is someone's work and we enjoy. But I thought it was interesting that he only projected two catchers, because I've been thinking for a while, since Cervelli, especially since Cervelli is a real player, Snicker seems to like three catchers, and only having two on this projection was interesting to me. And the other one that I think was at least noteworthy is the fact that Ender Inciarte was not on the projection. Billy Hamilton was, which is worth noting. And also, so was Adam Duvall, so was Austin Riley, so was Johan Camargo. So basically everybody but Ender. And I think from what Bowman was saying, it's basically health-related. He's not projecting Ender to be left off if fully healthy, but just basically saying that they weren't going to rush him back. That's kind of what I took away from this. But was there anything else that jumped out to you, and any thoughts on a projection that does not include Ender or Cervelli on it?
No, not too much. It's worth noting that Nick Markakis is now penciled in, and there was also an article, I think, on Friday that came out that that Nick and Ender had both progressed pretty well, and they were a little bit ahead of schedule. I guess it kind of flew under the radar. No one had really reported it, but Nick's been taking batting practice for a week now.
I was down there this week, actually, and there's a little bit of buzz about Markakis, you know, some whispers that he was out doing a little bit. So that one is less surprising, and there's been a little bit of chatter on that. Ender, it's been much more quiet, but the Markakis thing is not being, like, you know, promoted by them necessarily. They're not, like, Snicker's not going out and talking about it all the time once he's asked about it, but I think Markakis is pretty close from what I have heard. That's not, like, me pulling out sourcing, but just kind of being there once this week and reading between the lines, I think he's getting pretty close.
Yeah, and just because he's out there too, it's going to be interesting. You know, Freddie Freeman said that it took him really a full year when he broke his wrist. Now, I'm not saying they're the same wrist injury or whatever it may be, but Freddie, who is obviously as good of a hitter in baseball as there is, said it was really about a year before he regained full strength in his wrist. I don't know what that means for Nick Markakis, who's a guy who doesn't have or never really had the same pop that Freddie had. So
yeah, I mean, it's bad news, healthy, by the way. If he's not full strength, it's bad news for him, because at full strength, Markakis is a solid supporting piece. if he's not full strength, I mean, this is oversimplifying, but if he's not full strength, he doesn't really help you with much of anything.
Yeah.
So that's something to monitor. I'm sure that they're going to be careful with him to a certain extent, but you know, I tweeted about this a little bit this week and I want to get too deep into it, I guess, but I have a very strong suspicion that Markakis will be overused and compared to what he should be used when we get to October. And that won't be his fault. That'll be just Snicker going back to the well and treating him as an everyday player. I hope I'm wrong about that. I think he can bring value in a supporting role, but I have fear, and I know I'm not alone on this, that he's going to suddenly just be there every single day, and that would not be a good idea. Even if he is healthy, by the way.
Yeah, right. And I think, I mean, again, you talk about the advantage of having this lead they have. I hope that they don't rush him back. Now,
they won't.
Obviously, the Braves medical staff has done a really nice job this year, I think, and they certainly know, and Nick knows how he's feeling better than any of us do, but I do hope that because they have a couple of good options. I also want, it's not even on our little doc of things to talk about, but Matt Joyce has been phenomenal this year. Like, really, since the beginning of the year, he was a guy the Braves plucked for basically nothing right before the season began. Homered again today off Max Scherzer. He's homered in back-to-back games now. Last I checked, he has an on-base percentage above 400. And this isn't a guy who's in a Charlie Culberson role where he's maybe getting like three at-bats a week. I mean, you look at him now, he's up to 191 plate appearances this year. And on the year, and granted he's predominantly facing righties, which is his strength, hitting 296, 403, 488, with a 133 WRC plus. He's walking a bunch, isn't striking out too much either. So as we're talking about, I guess, corner outfielders and the prognosis moving forward, I did want to plug Matt Joyce at the prime age of 35 is having one of the best offensive seasons of his career with the Braves.
Yeah, it's funny. I got a message on Twitter this week that was like kind of making fun of us for going overboard in our Matt Joyce praise last week. So I'm really glad you did it again. We're turning into the Matt Joyce praise podcast.
But I'm, you're all right. For,
I mean, he's been awesome. I mean, I said it a lot last week. I don't want to add too much there, but he was he's been really good. And the hitting, if nothing else about Matt Joyce, we know that he rakes against right-handed pitching because he's done it for more than a decade. Like, yeah. He's not great at anything else. He's not a great fielder. He doesn't really hit lefties that well. But, you know, short of the stars on this team, if I have one at bat against the right-handed pitcher, it's probably Matt Joyce for me. Mm-hmm. Short of the stars, take the top four out, and he'd be the guy I'd go with. It's you know, him and McCann would be in there, and Markakis would be in there too. But I would go with Joyce. That's how good he is against righties. So, yeah, worth pointing out, and it's a super valuable piece to have, and someone who's been really consistent throughout the season. Oh, one more thing before we get off the roster. I should at least mention that the roster projection that Bowman had also left off Hechavarria, which doesn't surprise me too much. He noted that I'd be kind of choosing Camargo over him. I think Camargo, you know, has not been great this year. We've talked about that a number of times. But unless Dansby is shaky, which I don't think he is. I think if there's every reason to think that he is healthy, Hechavarria doesn't really do much for you. He's a pure backup shortstop and a glove first shortstop, and you're not going to take Dansby off the field. So unless there's some weirdness with Swanson or you just have nobody else, there's no real reason to carry Hechavarria, particularly because you have guys on your roster. In this instance, it would be, you know, Ozzie could play there too, but you have Camargo and Culberson who both can play shortstop. Something were to happen to Dansby, you can do that. And Hechavarria just doesn't hit enough. I know he's been pretty solid with the Braves and as an overall guy, but he was really just there while Dansby was out. If Dansby had been healthy, they probably wouldn't have signed him. There wasn't a whole lot of reason to do that. And I think in the playoffs, you know, it wouldn't blow me away if they carried him, but I'd be on the other side of that. I'd rather have Camargo. I'd rather have Culberson because, you know, I think those guys just have a little bit more utility. As bad as Camargo has been, I think, you know, with the bat, I probably trust him more than Hechavarria. And he can also play corner outfield spots, and Hechavarria is just basically a backup shortstop. Do you agree with that, or is he someone who you was more on your radar than he is for me?
You know, I think I would actually take Hechavarria over Culberson at this point. But
I wouldn't mind that, except for the fact that Culberson plays everywhere else. Like, yeah. I think Culberson's been bad, and I'm trying not to point it out because every time we talk about him being bad, we get yelled at. But he hasn't hit really at all since the beginning of the season. Like, he was really hot early, and he hasn't really hit for a long, long time. But I think we just know he's going to be on the team. That's kind of where I am. I just think it would be a big departure from Snicker to not have Culberson on the roster. I just think it'd be a little bit shocking to me, even as bad as he's been. A, he's just the guy they love, and B, he plays everywhere. Like, yeah. that's the advantage that he has over Hetchavria. I agree, Hetchavria is probably a better baseball player. It's just that Culberson has the longevity and the flexibility that I think they're probably going to prioritize.
And I think, you know, you mentioned it too about Dansby, assuming he's healthy, and he has struggled a fair bit since coming off the injured list. You know, but as you said, it's hard to envision a scenario where Dansby comes off the field where you're really worried about a defensive hole at shortstop.
Yeah,
right?
They're not going to do that.
if Dansby, you know, you're not going to pinch run for Dansby. You're not. He's not a guy who has extreme splits.
It would be injury only. Like, I can't imagine a healthy scenario where he's not playing all nine innings of a playoff game. It's just
I guess I'm kind of talking myself into Culberson, at least as things stand. You know, it's hard to envision a scenario where Dansby isn't playing defensively. I guess if he were to get hurt in the middle of a game, then you survive with Culberson or Camargo at short. And then, you know, if it's a serious injury, you make that roster move. But yeah, you know, all these players kind of on the fringe playoff roster, I think there's about 20 or so of them who are locks or close to it. And then there's there's obviously five spots, and there's maybe 10 players who are going to be right on the cusp of making it or just missing. So you do have a couple weeks to kind of sort it out. You hope everybody stays healthy and see how the guys perform over the next few weeks. But again, it's not the worst problem to have. We've talked at length about how much of an issue depth was last year, and I think to Anthopoulos in the front office office's credit, he's done a really good job of building more than just a 25-man roster to the point where you have 30 or 35 players in the organization where if you had to put them out there in a Game 5, Game 7 scenario in the playoffs, you wouldn't completely have to cover your eyes and hope that either the ball didn't get hit to them or that they didn't come up in a big situation at the plate.
Yeah, there's no Rene Rivera, there's no Ryan Flaherty on this roster competing for the playoffs right now, which is good. And by the way, we should at least point out, I'll do a mea culpa, that Culberson did homer today, so he did something recently, which is good. And I still think that he has more utility than I want to give him credit for. It's just the bat has not been there for a few months now, but maybe he's coming out of it. We'll see how that goes. Oh, and to your point about guys who are sort of jockeying for playoff position, I think, you know, without going into the rotation bullpen conundrum too much, you know, I think pretty clearly Cervelli, Camargo, Culberson, Riley, Hamilton, Duvall, not really Ortega. I think he has no chance barring injury, but that's, you know, seven guys. Hetchavria, you know, there's probably seven guys competing for like three or four spots.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not a bad problem to have in terms of the bats. Quickly on the rotation bullpen side, Bowman projects a four-man rotation, basically with the four guys you might think: Soroka, Keuchel, Max Fried, who's been awesome recently, and Julio Teheran, with Fulte coming out of the bench as kind of out of the bullpen as kind of the only long man in the bullpen. It's the guys you would imagine: Melanson, Green, Martin, Newcomb, Luke Jackson, and Blevins is, you have to have a lefty basically, and then Fulte. So only 11 pitchers. That does not surprise me, given that Fulte is one of the 11. If you have a real starter in the bullpen, that allows you to go a little bit shorter, I think, and that's kind of what I would do. But, I mean, there's not too much wiggle room here. Is there anything that you would change? I can't imagine what you would change unless you just, like, trusted Josh Tomlin over Fulte, which I guess they could. But
yeah.
Fulte's upside is just so much higher. It's not, I don't know. It's
weird. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think the only thing that'll play a little bit of a factor is who the Braves end up playing.
Yeah, it's
and again, not to turn this into the playoff.
We'll do all that later, I promise. It's
You know, but if you play a team, for example, like the Cubs, who have a handful of really good left-handed hitters, then I think Jerry Blevins' role and having two lefties becomes far more important than if you're playing the Cardinals, who are basically a right-handed exclusive lineup. I think they have one true lefty in their entire order, and it's Colton Wong, who's not going to scare you, right? So
no.
Maybe you don't care as much about a second lefty in that scenario, and you prefer a righty like Anthony Swarzak, who struggled, or Darren O'Day, or Jeremy Walker, something like that. But ultimately, no, I think that's probably going to be what the bullpen looks like.
Yep, that's probably going to be it. And again, we'll come back to this. It's only September 8th. We're going to talk, you know, three or four times between now and the playoffs, and we'll adjust as needed. Okay, that's enough of that for now. Let's take a quick break, Scott, and we'll come right back and talk more about what happened this week and look ahead a little bit.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, we're back. And, yeah, it was a fun week at the office for the Braves. Obviously, Sunday did not go well, and that goes without saying. But, as I referenced quickly earlier, they won 9 in a row. They had won 17 of 19 before today. A mini sweep over Toronto, which is not unexpected because Toronto's not very good. But it was still nice to see them take care of business there. And then taking 3 of 4 very, very important baseball games from the Nationals. We can sort of take the big picture approach in a minute. But, you know, anything stand out to you? My favorite thing that I wanted to reference first and foremost this week, and there's a lot of things to talk about, were the two performances from there was the Max Fried game on Thursday and the Dallas Keuchel game on Friday. Dallas Keuchel has a sub-1 ERA in his last 5 starts. It doesn't always look like he's absolutely dominating, but Keuchel coming on in a big way has been very nice, and I thought Fried was awesome again on Thursday to set the table, really set the tone for the series. That's probably a little bit overstated in some ways, but coming out and just blanking the Nationals for 7 innings in the first game of an all-important series, those things just kind of jumped out to me as really, really important in terms of navigating what became a series win.
Yeah, you know, we were talking on Thursday that it was weird in the sense that with 4 games against your division rival in the playoffs right around the corner, the Braves were in the position of, even if they split the 4 games, they were in good shape. They would still have been, what were they up, 7 games, 8 games at that point. Even if you split, the Nationals don't gain any ground and you cross 4 big days off the calendar. Well, they go ahead and, of course, and win 3 out of 4. Division leads at 9. It got up to 10 after Saturday night's win. But yeah, Fried and Keuchel were fantastic. I think, if memory serves, the Nationals are the best hitting team in the National League against left-handed pitching. So for those two guys to dominate the way they did was even more impressive. Fried, you know, he's had a couple of really dominant starts. That was as dominant as we've ever seen him. He was basically perfect after the first inning, and it was an infield single from Anthony Rendon. And after that, it wasn't even like the Nationals were hitting line drives or hitting under the warning track and being caught. He was dominant. So Fried was great. Keuchel's great. He seems like he's kind of really hit his groove. You know, of course, he was talking during an interview the other night that he almost is in the middle of his season right now. His season's really more in like June or July because of his late start. And that's when he said he always felt like he kind of really got into a groove. And he was up and down. I think there were some frustrations and inconsistencies in the first month or two with him as he did something he's never done before, signing in June. But no, those two guys are really great. Julio was really good once again on Saturday night. So take 3 out of 4 from the Nats, add another game to the division lead, all while cutting 4 days off the calendar is really good.
Yeah. You know, pretty clearly the big picture was, awesome in that you took care of business. You lose 1 game this week, and it happens to be the game that we record the podcast, which is less than optimal, but still, no complaints. I have to ask you, it's something we haven't talked about a ton. Does Mike Soroka cooling off worry you a little bit? Not worry. Worry is probably the wrong word. But he hasn't been quite as good, which is to be expected. He was kind of pitching over his head a little bit for most of the season. You know, he had a sub-2 ERA for a long time. His ERA, even after today, I think is not, you know, I'm looking at it now, trying to pull it up. But, you know, he wasn't great today by any means, and he's not been getting pelted by any means. You know, his ERA is 2.67 for the season. That's obviously quite good. But is that the pitcher he is? Like, that's a question that I think somebody asked me on Twitter. I can't remember who it was, so my apologies. But is there any concern for you that Soroka, you know, while still pitching well, hasn't been the dominant ace necessarily over the last 5-6 starts?
Yeah, I tweeted it too. I mean, I'm not concerned, right? Like, it's not like, oh no, the Braves, this kid that they've rode all year long is now falling apart, because there's no shame in giving up four runs to the Nationals over six innings. But even today, I mean, he had a fair number of strikeouts, but the umpire was terrible. And like three or four of his seven strikeouts were balls that were like a foot off the plate. So his day could have been even worse than what it was. He gave up a couple of homers uncharacteristically to a pretty bad Blue Jays lineup. So yeah, it's not like a great concern. Like, you know, it's not like, oh God.
Yeah. I'm not sounding the alarm. Like he's still been fine. It's just that when you have this rotation of guys, you know, Dallas Keuchel, for all that I just said positively about him at this point in his career, does not strike me as someone who's going to be terrifying to opponents. He's still a good pitcher, and you know, we praise that signing. He's been very good. I'm not saying anything bad about Dallas Keuchel, but he isn't the Cy Young quote unquote guy that he was. So if Soroka isn't that guy, it's a little bit concerning. I think Max Fried is the one guy who could probably go out and just like tear a lineup apart. Even when Soroka was cooking like that, I mean, there were nights when he looked that way, but it was more like him just being awesome generally, not just him dominating people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's weird because you look at his numbers and obviously he's been so
good. They're really good. He's been awesome.
The one thing, though, that was kind of the one primary concern was, and he was so good at, was limiting home runs in a time when everybody's hitting homers, right? Like, there's like seven home runs every night, it seems like. So for him to be so good at limiting home runs, and then all of a sudden he's starting to give them up. Now, maybe it's just a three or four game sample where it's just baseball and he's going to give up his fair share of them.
I mean, even coming in, like I'm looking at this now, this does not include today, and which wouldn't make these numbers look worse. The 15 starts before today, his ERA was 3.4. Now, that's really good. That's a good ERA. But, you know, some of that's just regression from it being like 1.4 before that. Yeah. But at the same time, like, you know, that's 15 starts is a half season of 3.4 ERA. And if that's your worst half season, that's awesome, clearly. But it's just, I'm not even sure what I'm saying. It's just a situation where I want to be realistic about what Mike Soroka is. And he's still super duper young, number one. He's never thrown this many innings in his career, like anywhere close to this many innings in his career. And if he keeps going, maybe you hope you skip him a time or two. Down the stretch, because the division lead and all that stuff, we were talking about opening doors earlier, but he's still going to be sitting at, you know, 170 plus in innings. And if you want to make the run you're going to hopefully make here, it's going to be a lot higher than that even. So just, I'm not concerned. Concern is the wrong word, but it's just more like, okay, let's note the fact that he hasn't been dominant for 3 months now. He's been good, not dominant. Good's fine, but, you know, it's just, we've all kind of been talking about him as the clear number one starter on this team because he's been that all season long and he's performed that way. But I'm not sure that does him justice, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think ideally, what's the magic number at right now? 11, something like that.
Yeah. It's exactly 11.
So ideally, within, 10 days, 2 weeks, they clinch. And they can comfortably skip Soroka a time, even Fried as well. Even skipping like a Julio start, I wouldn't hate. Like bring up guys who are on the 40-man.
Bring up Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright throw a start. Bryce Wilson throw a start. Whatever you need to do.
Even like Josh Tomlin could be stretched out for four or five. Like who cares?
Sure.
If you've clinched the division and they have a, you know, I think right now they're 4.5 or 5 back of the Dodgers for the number one.
I'm glad you brought that up because we got a couple questions about that today. Like, I think from last week's podcast, we sort of downplayed the pursuit of the number one seed. And, you know, with the way the Braves played this week, it became more interesting. You know, they lost today and the Dodgers won, and now it's 3.5 games, which is not that's a number that you certainly could close. At the same time, you know, 538 is the projection system that updates in real time. They have them projected 5 games ahead of the Braves.
And they won the season series. So if they tie, then the Dodgers get the one seed in the Braves.
Yeah, so it's a situation where, yes, it's not over. And I think it's a lot more likely that the Braves finish first than it is that they don't win the East at this point. That goes without saying. But I don't think you can worry about that unless the Dodgers just really, really blow up here. Because I'm not sure it's wise for the Braves to put the foot to the floor all the way to the end on the chance that they catch the Dodgers, because we're all hoping, and at this point it seems pretty likely that they're going to be able to cruise in the division a little bit, because, you know, the lead is what it is, and the 11 magic number of 11 with 18 games to play is a pretty nice cushion. It's not over. I'm an Atlanta sports fan. It's not over till it's over. I'm not closing the door. I'm not ringing the bell. I'm not doing any of that stuff. But, you know, number one seed is not out of my mind, but it's not my concern, honestly.
Yeah.
It's get to the finish line healthy and ready to go and set up for the playoffs. It's not really going in. And honestly, you could argue that you'd rather have the two seed anyway. The only thing that changes, it's basically an argument between, would you want home field against the Dodgers in the second round, or would you want to face not the Nationals in the first round?
Yeah.
I don't know. I go both ways on that. I don't think it's a slam dunk. People were acting like it was a slam dunk that you want the one seed. I guess you probably would, but it isn't like a definite for me. I think the Nationals are pretty clearly the third best team in the National League. Maybe I'm just on that limb. If you don't believe that, then you probably wouldn't want the two seed. But if you think the Nationals are the third best team, and I do, I think I'd rather just avoid that and have them play the Dodgers in the first round. But
yeah, me too. And I think too, you look at it, so the Braves are 89-55. The Cardinals, who now have a 4.5 game lead over the Cubs.
Like, yeah, they've been awesome quietly, by the way, for a while.
Yeah, they've had a pretty soft schedule, and they've just been crushing people while the Cubs and Brewers beat each other up. But at this point, the Braves have a 7.5 game lead over the Cardinals. I mean, for sure you want home field advantage in the NLDS. Like in a short series, I think it's so much more important than in the NLCS.
Yep.
So if the trade-off is, well, yeah, they're going to be the two seed, and if they win the NLDS and if the Dodgers win the NLDS, then you have to open up on the road, then so be it. I would much rather fall a couple games short of the Dodgers and give, you know, skip a Mike Soroka start, skip a Max Fried start. Because as we talked about, Soroka, this is his first full year. This is Fried's first full year. Even Julio's logged a ton of innings. It would be really nice to give those guys a breather and get them ready for October.
It certainly would be. And one quick note about the Cardinals, as we just brought them up, they were sub 500 at the All-Star break. So that kind of tells you that they've been on the Nationals Braves trajectory of just lighting the world on fire for the last, you know, 2+ months now. They were 44-45 at one point. So now they are 37-17 in their last 54. So they've been really good.
But yeah,
I still think that you'd rather play them than the Nationals or the Dodgers.
Oh, easily. And you look at their team, and that's, you know, it's kind of like the Braves' problem. Their last couple playoff teams is like, yeah, they're a good regular season team, but they just don't scare you in a short series because of how the roster's built. Like, Jack Flaherty's really good, but Miles Michaelis is not a, you know, shut down Max Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin type. Adam Wainwright is their number three. He's been okay, you know, so it's not
Braves
like,
legend Adam Wainwright.
That's right. Yeah. Never forget. So all this to say, you know, you don't want to go too far here and start projecting playoff series victories on September 8th or whatever today is. But
no.
I guess to kind of wrap it all up, I wouldn't worry too much. I think that that's the whole playoff seeding thing is going to be what it is. Clinch the division first, rest your guys, and as long as you're no worse than the two seed, I think you're in good shape.
Yeah, I totally agree. I started to do that tangent about Soroka. It's just it was on my mind, and somebody asked me about it, and I meant to say on last week's show, and it got even a little bit worse this week, so I wanted to point that out a little bit. That's probably all we need to say about this week. Obviously, it goes without saying that just going out and winning can't be overstated. You go out and win 3 out of 4 against the Nationals, and you basically take your NL East odds from like 90%-ish to 98-99% in 4 days. And that's with a loss. I mean, you know, if they won today, it would have been the Avalanche would have been here. So they were kind of due for a loss, I suppose. Let's look ahead a little bit, unless you have more to reflect on from this week. We could look ahead at the schedule and just like kind of what's ahead, because I mean, the Braves, we said it before, but the magic number is 11 with 18 to play. That means the Braves could very realistically just do it on their own. If they go 11-7, the Nationals can't catch them. And by the way, the Nationals are not going to win out. I'm sorry, that doesn't really happen. I guess there's maybe a 0.001% chance the Nationals actually win all of their games.
No,
but that does not seem likely.
Yeah, they have an insane schedule. They have the Twins. They still have to go to the Twins. They go to the Cardinals. They host the Braves.
We talked about the gauntlet. I think it was last week on last week's show about the Braves hadn't played the Nationals and Phillies so much. But then the Braves at the very end of the year play San Francisco, Kansas City, and the Mets. And that is a nice break compared to what the Nationals have. So
yeah, and a Mets team that's probably going to be out of it. They lost again today.
Yeah, you would imagine. I mean, you're going up there, and I'm sure they want to play spoiler a little bit because it's a division series and it's on the road, and you don't want to take anything for granted. But again, we're hoping that the Braves are setting up the rotation by then, and we're going to see some soft lineups and some days off and all that fun stuff that week. So 11, match number 11 with 18 to go. Obviously, an awesome situation. 99%. Division odds most places, 98-99%. But at Philly this week for 4, and then Washington again. The matchup I have circled on my metaphorical sheet here is Friday, the rematch, Soroka and Scherzer again. If things go well the next 4 days, maybe Friday we're even in a better spot. But that was just fun to see those guys, like, even just written down facing each other. It's just one of those things that you get excited about as a baseball fan to talk about that. But, you know, 4 against the Phillies, what's the goal there? I think the goal for me would be go up there and split. Realistically, you want to do more than that, but if you can go ahead and get 2 out of 4 on the road against a Phillies team that, you know, the Phillies have been a disappointment this year overall, but they're still a team that's over 500. They're not a terrible baseball team. You certainly can't be expected to go in there and win 3 out of 4 games, even with the Braves playing so well. The math would tell you that a split is pretty likely, and that would be just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at Monday night is Folty against Aaron Nola, who has been terrific and is terrific. So even if they lose Monday, you talked about splitting, then it's kind of their best against your worst. But then you have Fried against Jason Vargas, who's been pretty bad since coming over. Keuchel against Eflin. We talked about how good Dallas has been. And then Julio Teheran against Drew Smyly, who is apparently starting games for the Phillies right now. You go 2-2. We mentioned the national schedule, so they're off Monday, but then they have a 3-game series against the Twins, and they're going to face the Twins' 3 best starters in that series, which helps. Just split the series. As long as you don't start getting swept, they're going to win the division. There's only, you know, it's really a numbers game at this point.
Don't say gonna, Scott. I don't like that. My Atlanta sports radar is going off. Don't say gonna.
After the Blues won the Stanley Cup, I no longer believe in curses. So
you're the only one.
Let me bring on. Yeah, I know. That's maybe because I'm not an Atlanta fan across the board. But
exactly.
just win 2 games. Shit. Even if they lose 3 out of 4, just hope that the Nationals don't sweep the Twins suddenly. The Nationals have lost. This past week, if it wasn't for that insane 7-run comeback against the Nats.
Let's just mention that real quick. What a ridiculous baseball game that was. And that was last time that happened since we recorded last. That was Tuesday. If you somehow missed this, the Nats came back from, was it 7 down or 6 down? 7?
I think they were down 6 and scored 7.
Yeah, 10-4 in the ninth, and they score They score seven and win it on Tuesday, 11-10. But aside from that, I think you were going to say they still this week went 2-5, even with that win. So they were due for some regression, as the Braves probably are too. The Nationals were due for a cool off. They had been incredible for a long time, and it happened. And then now, by the way, your prize, Nationals, is to go on the road to Minnesota and play a very good baseball team. So best of luck with that.
Yeah, and then they get to turn around and host the Braves for 3 games. And those, at that point then, you know, you talk about both the Phillies. I mean, you look at the Phillies. The Braves can actually eliminate the Phillies if they win 3 games this week against
let's have that happen.
Philly,
they could
knock them off, at least out of the East. You know, the wild card race is kind of funky. I guess we survey the National League. I mean, the Nats are 3 up. I can't imagine a scenario where the Nationals don't make it. Even with a tough schedule, they're a good enough team with a 3-game.
I could see them not being the home team. Like, they have a 3-game lead on the Cubs, and it's 4.5 on the Diamondbacks.
Yeah,
they're obviously the big favorite to be the home team in the wild card game. I think the Cubs, just being the Cubs, and the fact they're only 3 back, they could chase them down. It would not be a big surprise. But you know, if you're talking about the Diamondbacks or the Brewers where the Phillies having to climb, you know, five games in the loss column in 17, 18 games. That's a big way to drop. So I think the Nationals are going to be there. It's a one game playoff. Who the bleep knows what's going to happen in that game, whether it's the Nationals or not. But I think they're the best team and they're three games up. So the combination of those two things puts them in a pretty good spot. The other team though, they're what, four teams within two games? Phillies, Brewers, D-backs, and Cubs are all within two games of each other for that second wild card spot. And then the Mets are not done. I mean, we kind of buried the Mets a second ago. They're probably done, but they're only four back. I mean, they have to pass three teams. That's more of the problem, is they have to pass three teams. They have to probably win. I mean, they have 20 games left. They probably have to go like 15-5, which is a lot.
This week too, looking at the schedule, the Mets and Diamondbacks actually play each other. So that's a series that will probably put one of those two teams to bed. I mean, it's kind of fun this time of year when you have a 9-game division lead. You can kind of look and enjoy the other races. You're not like sweating out every pitch. Now, again, that's not too, I don't want to get yelled at in a couple of days if the Braves lose a few in a row and say, you jinxed them.
It'll be me yelling at you, not everybody. It'll just be me like on text message screaming at you, Scott.
It's for me tempting the Atlanta sports gods, I guess. I mean, it's going to be a fun couple weeks. The American League has a really good wild card race too going on, so it should be a fun stretch. And again, you know, the Braves play 7 games this week. If they go 4-3, the division is basically over. Even if they go 3-4, the division is pretty close to getting wrapped, especially if they can win a game or two against the Nationals.
Magic number of 11, it may not seem as easy as it actually projects to be, but if your magic number is 11 with 18 to play, like, you know, the Nationals, what's the best, okay, in your mind right now, let's do the math, what is the absolute reasonable best case scenario for the Nationals down the stretch? Like 14-4?
And they have what? 18 games left, 20 games left, I think. I think they have 20
left.
They
have 20 left. The Braves only have 18 games left.
I mean, absolute best case.
Like 15-5, 16-4?
Best case is probably like 15-5. I mean, they would have to go, like, the thing is, they've already had their nuclear run and they still couldn't catch up to the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, if we say 16-4, which we both think is exceptionally unlikely, if they go, that's four losses. The magic number is 11. If they go 16-4, which again is wildly unlikely, like a 2% outcome, if that, the Braves would still get in. The Braves would still win the division if they go 7-11.
Yeah.
So the odds of that are sub 1%.
Yeah.
I mean, I am not closing the door because I have seen some things in my life, but including a 28-3 Super Bowl lead.
There it is.
I had to. But listen, it's probably a sub 1% outcome. It's certainly a sub 2% outcome that the Braves don't win the NL East at this point. The stars have to align in such a way that it's just absolutely insane. And I just want to put the numbers out there. So, yes, I guess the Nationals could go 19-1. They're not going to do that. I'm knocking on all wood in front of me right now, but they're not going to do that. So, realistically, if the Braves just don't completely fall apart, just don't go 4-14. That's basically what you have to do. Just sort of be 500. I'm willing to bet a heavy amount if the Braves go even 7-11, they're gonna win the NL East.
Yeah.
So
especially with the schedule and looking ahead to next weekend, they will see Max Scherzer again on Friday, but they will miss Strasburg and Corbin in the series, which is nice. So they'll get Anibal Sanchez, who's been pretty good ever since his early season funk.
But Joe Ross.
But I would certainly take Anibal over their other two aces. And then either Joe Ross or Austin Voth, who was actually pretty good on, was it Saturday night when he pitched?
Yeah, I mean, it's projected to be Joe Ross right now on what I'm looking at, but neither of those guys are going to scare you. And Anibal against Max Fried is not a disadvantage for the Braves on paper. You know, anytime you're facing Scherzer, it's advantage Nationals, and the betting lines would tell you that and all that stuff. But any other matchup within reason is not going to be a huge gap, even if it's Strasburg against Folty or Julio, whoever your least favorite guy is. That isn't a huge mismatch for the Braves. If it's Scherzer against Folty, you you know, you're talking about a pretty significant underdog in that situation, because Scherzer is the best pitcher in the world, or at least one of the best three pitchers in the world. But yeah, I mean, just the math. I'm trying to do the math and rely on the math and not my horrors from the past. The math will tell you that the Braves are in incredible shape. So
there you go.
All right, Scott. Well, we probably blabbered on enough. Anything that you wanted to get out there that we've missed so far? And if not, anything you got going on and looking ahead? I know we talked about the schedule, but you writing anything, talking about anything, just planning for stuff on this podcast or what?
Yeah, Bowman actually stole my thunder a little bit. I was going to work on a kind of a playoff roster construction. Yeah, so
just dunk on Mark Bowman and then post it and then send him a text. Like, hey, right, Bowman, yeah, see this? Dunk. Yeah. On you. No, I actually met Mark a couple weeks ago for the first time. I talked to him a couple times in my life, but I met him a few weeks ago for the first time. Talked to him again this week. Great guy.
Yeah, super nice guy. Yep. So we'll have that, and as always on the Twitter machine is always a good time. But yeah, keep checking it out. We do want to give a shout out to the minor league guys. The Braves.
Yeah, season's over.
Season is over. Over. Gwinnett is out. So, and they were the only team. So, shout out to Eric and all of the minor league gurus we have, and Road to Atlanta and all that good stuff. Those guys do great work. So be sure to check out that if you haven't.
Yeah, they're going to continue. It's not going to be weekly, I don't think, on Road to Atlanta, just because, you know, much like this podcast. In fact, this podcast is easier to do in the offseason because at least we can talk about free agency. There isn't too much to talk about on the minor league podcast. They'll find some stuff because they live, breathe, drink minor league baseball and prospects. But I can't imagine it's going to be weekly, but hopefully Road to Atlanta will still be around on a fairly regular basis. And I second Matt. They've done a great job this year. Our content will continue on the site, of course, as well. But please subscribe to this feed if you haven't already. That's a good place to start. It's just hitting the subscribe button on whatever podcast platform that you like. And along with this podcast, which you hopefully enjoy, Road to Atlanta comes on the same feed. And I definitely recommend it because that's, honestly, I say this all the time, and I absolutely mean it. Basically the entirety of my prospect catch up stuff happens between listening to that podcast and reading our minor league recaps. So I always make fun of myself and saying I'm not the prospect guy. There are things I don't know for sure. But I learn most of what I know about our prospects and the system from those guys. And I take them as pretty much as gospel. You know, everybody's wrong sometimes, and you want to take the whole picture as well. But our guys do the most work on the Braves prospects of anyone. They watch the Braves prospects constantly. I know national guys do a great job. Fangraphs, Keith Law, all those guys do a good job. But they're not only watching the Braves prospects. Our guys are just dialed in on those guys. So there you go. I know I'm tooting our own horn to some degree, but Eric's not here. So he won't get sheepish because he's not here. So I can do that in full-throated fashion. They do a fantastic job. It was a pleasure to read those guys again all year long and listen to them on Road to Atlanta. So shout to them.
Yeah, good work, fellas. Appreciate it.
Anyway, well, Scott, thank you for joining me. We did 45 minutes in September on it's baseball. Overall, just an awesome week of content for the Braves, just performance and everything that was going on. You know, sort of fell a little bit flat today, but it's important to kind of ignore that and just talk about the rest of the week. And it was an awesome display of baseball. Kind of putting the foot on the throat of your opponent is fun to watch if you're a Braves fan. And hopefully they'll slam the door in even more significant fashion this week. And as you said, 4-3 pretty much ends it. So go ahead and do that. That'd be fun. Let's just I hope a week from now we're talking about, like, to a point where I'm actually just like slamming the door. That'd be fun. I look forward to being the last guy who's willing to wave the flag and just say, all right, it's over. And I will be the last guy, Scott. I will not say until then.
I don't blame you. I seriously, that Atlanta thing is pretty unreal. So I don't blame you one bit. But yeah,
shouts to your Colts and my Falcons for both losing today, by the way.
Yeah, you know, I was hoping to get through it without talking about football.
But we got to the end.
Right. Yeah, what can you do? Hey, Colts looked all right post Andrew Luck, I guess. Falcons, I don't know, man. A tough opponent, and I have Julio Jones on fantasy team, so hopefully Julio does good.
Oh, the Falcons. Let's not talk about this anymore. I brought it up, but I regret my decision. All right. Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate it, man. We'll talk much, much, much more. And now that the Braves are basically in the playoffs, we can talk about this, at least plug it a little bit. As we did last year, our plan is to record a podcast after every playoff game. Last year it was only a handful of games. But hopefully that will be a little bit longer this time around. It'll be me and someone else. And maybe if I can't do it, maybe it'll just be Scott and Eric or whatever. But we are planning to have a new podcast after every game. We're not going to be a daily podcast moving forward. But in the playoffs, we'll be almost daily. So buckle up for that and subscribe. Tell your friends.
Yeah, let's hope it's more than four games. That was the one after the win last year was super fun. Like we talked for like an hour and a half. The others, I think I did like games one and two. And it was just kind of depressing. And then game four, you're just like kind of bummed that the year's over.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we'll see you guys in January. No.
Yeah, hopefully we get to do, you know, 10, 15 of them this time around instead of the quick four.
Ooh, 15. That would be a World Series win, Scott.
That would be – hey, you know what? I predicted that earlier today. I probably jinxed the Braves and they're going to lose.
Wait, in public?
Now. Yeah, like – I don't know. The Dodgers...
Save those tech for the podcast, Scott. Save those tech for the podcast. What's going on?
I know. I think the Dodgers have some issues. Their bullpen has problems and like Ryu's in trouble. But anyway, maybe I should have led with that. But I think it's at least... I think there's a good chance. I mean, I think this is truly the first team. Like,
you heard it here first. September 8th. Like Scott Coleman predicts World Series victory.
Yeah, like last year.
In fact, that's
going to
be a headline
playoffs.
Of this podcast now. Oh, cool. Scott predicts World Series victory.
Like, no, I predicted they would make the World Series probably get steamrolled by the Astros, who were going
to
be...
Well, the Astros are another couple together.
But I think, like, you know, but, like, last year, the playoffs are just kind of like a cherry on top. Like, we were happy, and they were way ahead of schedule. And then in 2013 or whatever, they were outmatched. And 2010 was a great team, but they had all the injuries in August and September and fell apart. Like, this is the first team, barring a couple of major injuries over the next 3 weeks, as I legitimately knock on wood, that like there's going to be expectations to win the first round, and if not win the second round, depending on the opponent, you know, go.
Yeah, at a bare minimum, I think at this point in time, we can kind of declare on September 8th. I can speak for the fan base, and we hear from people all the time. If the Braves don't make the NLCS, people are going to be very, very upset.
Yep. Yeah.
I think if they lose to the Dodgers, most people will be like, you know, disappointed. But if they lose to the Dodgers in the LCS, they'll be like, okay, they're better than us. It's okay. If they don't make the NLCS, people are going to be disappointed. And that's okay. I think that's pretty reasonable at this point. You know, I'm not going to tell you that the Braves are allowed to do that, but reasonable, rational expectations, the Braves are going to be favored in the first round of the playoffs.
Yep.
So
significantly, I think, too.
Like, yeah, I mean, with home field advantage, if they're playing the Cardinals or – That's the most likely opponent. If they're playing the Cardinals in round one, the Braves are favored in that series. They just are. So it's baseball. Anything can happen, both positively and negatively, but that's not the expectation. And that's a whole different ballgame to kind of what you were saying. You know, last year kind of was the spoiler all season long. They sneak in the playoffs. They're playing this juggernaut and they lose. And it was okay. It was tough to watch in the moment, but everybody realized pretty quickly that was the right outcome. The Dodgers were just way better and that wasn't a big deal. This year, you know, modest expectations preseason aside, pretty much since, you know, late May, they've been the favorite, and now they've been awesome, even better since then. So I think, you know, it can be damning sometimes to have expectations, but hopefully they rise to it, and they've risen to it so far. They've been living up to it pretty much every day for 3-4 months now. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. All right, Scott, we've rambled on enough. Thank you, my friend.
Absolutely, buddy. Thanks for having me on. Sorry for missing the last couple weeks. Such is life, but glad to be here. And it should be a fun final 3 weeks, and then hopefully lots of playoff pods.
Yep, I totally agree. Again, one more time, subscribe to this podcast. Please subscribe. Leave 5-star feedback if you enjoy the show. Tell a friend, and we'll see everybody next week.